Oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated.
The orders of the court are here to announce and are posted outside and in the court office. There are three clauses that will be submitted today for oral argument. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. Alexander Oil Company versus City of Seguin, Washington County. Clause will allow 20 minutes, 30 seconds in oral argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Second is Mildred Lee Simpson Dixon versus Johnny Sam Merlin Simpson from Lee County. That clause will allow 15 minutes, 30 seconds in oral argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. The final clause to be submitted today is Harris County District Attorney's Office versus J.P.S. from Harris County. Also, we have allotted 15 minutes for each side of the oral argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Justice Spears is ill today, but he will participate in these causes if they are resolved before the end of his term. We are recording each of these arguments by tape for the convenience of the court, oral recording. Should you desire to listen to those oral tapes, you may make application to the clerk's office to do so. Also, the arguments today, at least in part, are being filmed by television pursuant to the court's new rules, which allows recording by cameras in the courtroom. Counsel, the second and third causes are not required to remain in the courtroom while earlier arguments are being presented, but we do ask that you remain nearby so that we may proceed with your argument without delay. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these calls, but we will complete the entire submission schedule before we take our lunch recess. The court is now ready to hear argument from Petitioner Alexander Oil Company in the first cause.
May it please the court, Mr. James W. Saunders will present argument for petitioner.
Please the court. In December of 1986, the city of Seguin attempted to annex approximately 193 acres by ordinance 814. Part of that 193 acres belonged to petitioner Alexander Oil Company. As a result of the annexation, petitioner has been assessed both sales tax and ad valorem tax, and he has paid those taxes as they came due. Petitioner contends that in passing the ordinance, the city failed to meet certain mandatory requirements of the Texas Annexation Act, and that is former section 970A, Article 970A, Section 6 and 10. The city also failed to meet certain mandatory requirements of the Texas Open Meetings Act. That's Article 6252-17, Section 3A, Subparagraphs A and C. Now, the city failed to comply with at least 12 separate requirements of Section 6 and 10. There were three provisions of Section 3A of the Open Meetings Act that the city failed to comply with. And petitioner urges that under the Annexation Act, the authority of Fuller Springs versus Lufkin, Knapp versus El Paso, and as recently as I believe it was June or May of this month, Bell versus the Greater Texoma Utility Authority, the failure to fully comply with the notice and hearing provisions of the Annexation Act renders the act void. Further, with regard to the Open Meetings Act, the authority of the County of Smith versus Thornton, which requires a literal compliance with the notice and posting provisions of Section 3A of the Open Meetings Act, renders any action taken without compliance void. Now, essentially, the city of Seguin failed to meet 12 points in the Annexation Act. And without, those points are set forth in our brief, but I'm going to summarize a few of them here to look at the magnitude of what was happening.
Doesn't the city, in essence, concede that they did not comply with the procedural requirements of the
They do concede that they that there were not compliance in full. They say that those were irregularities, and the Court of Appeals sustained that position below.
And do you also, on your part, concede that the property that was annexed was adjacent to the city,
Absolutely.
Was within the city's extraterritorial jurisdiction, and not within any other city's boundary?
Absolutely.
So what do you gain by this lawsuit other than time and taxes, perhaps, for a period? Because the city can just redo it if we were to
agree with you. Right. They will have to furnish us services. The city has failed to furnish and insisted at the time of the first public hearing that they did not have to supply a plan for services, nor did they have to furnish the services. We insist on having services if we're going to be annexed. We insist at least to have a plan that provides services so that we then have our remedies available to us.
Do these services include fire, police, and ambulance?
The services did include fire, police, and ambulance. Now, that's a good point, Your Honor, because we are a little bit unclear as to whether or not they're going to provide those. But we know they're not going to provide sewer and water services.
Not required to, are they?
Say again, please.
They're not required to, are they? All they have to do is come up with some plan.
They have to come up with a plan, and then we have our remedies available to us.
Which are?
We can go back for disannexation, which is what we're trying to do now. We're at a great disadvantage in the sense that people right adjacent to us have, right across the road from us, have services. We have to pay the taxes. We don't get the services that they do. We have to furnish the infrastructure necessary for all of the sewage and water. That's additional burden for us.
There is a long line of cases that would deny you the authority to challenge the city's annexation for procedural regularities. Why isn't that authority binding in this case?
We believe under the notice provisions that the city did not comply with the 20-day rule. In other words, they initiated their annexation proceedings before the lapse of 20 days after the final public hearing.
And the question is that a private party, there's a line of cases that say the private party cannot contest these type of irregularities. Only the state can. That's the question I think Justice Heck is addressing. Right. Why should that, the Coon line of cases, prevail or be binding?
Because we believe that the cases that are followed under Knapp, Fuller Springs, and now the Bell case say that the provisions for notice and the procedural matters as far as the times and the notice provisions preclude that. That is a due process right that we're entitled to have, and if it's categorized as a irregularity, we are prevented from challenging in court those irregularities at another level. We are also prevented from having effective pre-annexation procedures, which let us have time, hearings, and the opportunity to look and discuss a service plan.
Who has that right? Just any citizen of the city of Seguin, or any citizen of the state of Texas, or citizens of Missouri, or who?
The citizens that are within the area that is being annexed, for sure.
What gives Where is that found?
Well, the statute says all interested parties.
Wouldn't someone in the city of Seguin who was not in the annexed area be interested?
They would have to demonstrate an interest, and that interest has been otherwise defined as being someone that would have their property jeopardized. In other words, be taxed without the service. They would be placed under the umbrella of the city and not get the benefit of that. That's the interest that we're talking about.
So where is it?
There are cases on that, and Your Honor, I just didn't expect that question. I don't have one with me, but there are cases on that, and that. That's right. That's correct. He would, if he could show an interest. And that interest has been defined in the way that I cited my cases in the Court of Appeals. That interest showed that if we had been taxed and not received the services and paid the tax, then we would be considered to be an interested party in that regard. If that citizen within the city of Seguin could show that same relationship, then he would have the right, or he or she would have the right, to make that argument. We did.
And doesn't the annexation statute provide for a service plan? Wasn't it implied when they got the annexation that we talked about a service plan?
The Annexation Act specifically says at the public hearing there will be presented and explained a service plan. And that is a mandatory requirement of those public hearings. That then, by extrapolation, gets to be the subject of those public hearings and should be given the protection under the Open Meetings Act.
Well, it's mandatory that it be discussed at every annexation hearing. Then don't you know clearly that if they're covering annexation, they're covering service plan? What more notice do you need?
Your Honor, there are a lot of things about annexation. But the only way I can respond to that, unless you're a lawyer, you don't have the foggiest idea that it's going to be a service plan discussed. Unless they tell you. And that's the purpose of the open meeting.
Can the Texas concerned citizens against annexation, if there were such a group, object to the annexation of this land because they feel like that annexation is generally bad and detrimental to citizens and ought to be opposed wherever it springs up?
No case comes to mind that's ever presented that, and I don't believe that would be within the meaning of the collateral attack. The collateral attack is for a very specific purpose, and that's to protect the people who have a specific interest harmed.
Where do we find that?
We find that.
Where is the authority?
Sorry. I apologize again, Your Honor. I did not expect that question and don't have the case with me. It's in my briefcase, but I can get it.
But your position is this is not an action which must be brought by the state for Waranto.
Absolutely.
Why shouldn't the state have the sole right to challenge on behalf of the greater citizenry the annexation by the city?
I believe that is the right of the state, to challenge on the greater interest of the city and the greater interest of the citizens and the greater interest of the state if it sees that being harmed. That, I believe, Your Honor, is the line that is drawn between this. There may not be but one solitary individual standing out here that has been harmed by this. And if his rights, in which the legislature thought enough of it to give him certain rights to go in and negotiate, to be represented, or to be at least be a participant in the service plan activities. That one person has that right, then he has a right to challenge if the city does not comply with those mandatory provisions that the legislature has set out.
What is to prevent multiplicity of suits by various different people, some of whom want it to be annexed, some of whom don't want it to be annexed, filed all over the county perhaps, at different times, at different stages of proceedings, either challenging or defending the annexation?
I think that is the heart of this question. And, Your Honor, I believe that the thing that does that is the legislature has given some very simple and straightforward language in the statute. If that is met, the individuals are cut off. They have no right to bring this collateral activity. None whatsoever. That statute is very clear. It's very easy to follow. In fact, the lawyer for the city of Seguin wrote them a letter explaining exactly how they should do it, set it all out before they started. They just chose not to follow his letter.
Well, now, there may be a good faith disagreement, for example, that the Open Meetings Act notice ought not necessarily to include the word service plan. If there is such a good faith disagreement, then there's no alternative, I take it, to just a multiplicity of suits by whomever is interested or not interested in the case.
If are you saying that if the notice should not require the words service plan, did I hear you correctly?
No, sir. I'm saying if there is a good faith disagreement,
yes,
about whether it should or not, then there is no way of preventing citizens who either want annexation or don't want it to file a multiplicity of lawsuits either attacking or trying to oppose the annexation.
Your Honor, I believe if the service plan is presented to the, and I may not be hearing you accurately yet, but if the service plan is actually presented and the service plan is disagreeable, and let's say the individuals again feel that they have not had their rights addressed under that service plan, they do not have the right to bring a collateral action.
If they feel their rights have not been addressed, they
have a service plan.
They don't have the right to bring the action.
That's correct. What they are entitled to is an opportunity at the hearing to have the service plan explained to them and discussed, and they have an opportunity to review it. Now, the good faith that we're talking about is whether or not the city even puts forth a service plan. They didn't. At the first public hearing, they didn't have one. At the second public hearing, they didn't have one. They didn't get one up until they went to the city council. And then they amended it. It did not happen at the two public hearings that were required.
Doesn't it seem likely to you that at any annexation hearing, there are going to be suggestions that the procedural requirements were not strictly followed?
Those become irregularities, and
yes,
I can give you an example.
And if there is an irregularity, it can be challenged by any interested party. That's your position?
No. That is not our position.
Sorry?
That is not our position. We do not think that we can challenge on an irregularity. We're saying if they fail to present a service plan or to explain the service plan, that is not an irregularity. Looks like I'm in my warning time. I would ask the court to reverse the Court of Appeals, to render its judgment that the ordinance is void, remand to the trial court for damages and for attorney's fees.
There's one issue before the court today, and that is whether a private party can collaterally attack an annexation ordinance if it is not void ab initio. As the justices have already, some of the justices have already noted, there's a long line of precedent dating back approximately 100 years saying, no, there is no collateral attack without first showing void ab initio. This morning in the brief 20 minutes that the City of Seguin has got to discuss this issue with the court. Of course, I have to back up a minute and realize that this court at any time can overrule that precedent. And if this morning we're reexamining that rule to determine whether it should remain in effect in the state of Texas, then in doing so, the City of Seguin this morning would like to briefly go through the historical development of that rule, looking at the policies behind it, also distinguishing what Alexander Oil has claimed to be some deviations from the rule in recent cases, and then finally ending up with a very brief rebuttal of Alexander Oil's points, saying that there were procedural irregularities. And I'll stop just a moment and say that the City of Seguin has never conceded that these procedural irregularities exist. In fact, the record before this court will show that it has disputed those irregularities, particularly that dealing with the Texas Open Meetings Act.
Absolutely correct. Keep your voice level up when we have
lots of
competition.
Oh, the construction? All right. I will talk a little bit louder. Yes, Your Honor. I will.
Last.
Your Honor, I believe they did have exact literal compliance because there's no case been pointed out that said what the statute says is the subject of, and in fact goes on to say that notice doesn't require, that these rules of notice do not require that every subject matter that might be discussed or come up within that hearing be so noted in the notice. That is correct. The notice in the newspaper and the notice posted on the door of the municipal building.
How is that any different than the unfortunate announcement of the Austin Independent School District that they were going to discuss personnel, didn't bother to mention that they were going to select the school superintendent?
I don't think personnel naturally leads you to the assumption of finding a new school superintendent, where when you say you're going to discuss annexation and annexation is going to include by statute some presentation of a service plan, as a matter of fact, the minutes of the hearing show that an attorney for Alexander Oil was present at the hearing and questioned the service plan. So there was notice of it. And I don't think subject matter means you've got to list off each and every item that you're going to discuss. So I would argue that there was compliance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. That is true. But I still would maintain that subject being annexation would be enough notice that services to the annex area would be included. Otherwise, you would have to list each and every agenda item, or I don't mean agenda item, but each and every subject that would be discussed.
Do I gather from your brief that the
that, but your contention is that even if you did not have an exact legal compliance with the Open Meetings Act, since this case is about having standing, there's nothing that any citizen can do about it.
My position is not that there's not anything any citizen can do about it. There are two remedies. One is to approach the Attorney General, the county attorney, or the district attorney and ask them to join in a quo warranto proceeding. And that discretion is vested with those people to decide whether to intervene on behalf of the entire public.
It is your contention that no citizen can go in and seek relief in reference to violation of the
If it, yes, because that is a procedural irregularity. It is not a void ab initio issue. Because the city had the power to annex, then it cannot be void ab initio. And in order to, for a private citizen to attack annexation, and that grows up not from the law surrounding the Texas Open Meetings Act, but rather from the law surrounding the whole process of annexation, and that annexation is a legislative function, and it is left to the legislature and the state of Texas to decide and govern and regulate.
So there's an exception in the Open Meetings Act for annexation?
It has not yet been created, but I would say this whole body of law regarding annexation and the requirement of a quo warranto proceeding would do so. I don't remember the date of the act, enactment of the Open Meetings Act, but as late as 72, this court is very specifically discussing, meaning the Supreme Court is very specifically discussing the existence of the quo warranto procedure and the policies behind it.
You said private citizens has two remedies. One is to approach the government authority. What's the other?
The other one is a disannexation procedure, and in response to Justice Heck's questions about disannexation, that statute requires a 51% petition by all the majority of the or 51% of the voters in that annexed area have to ask for this disannexation to do the very thing of avoiding multiplicity of suits and trying to enforce the public good as opposed to one citizen may not want this annexation, and that's really what the problem in this case is. We disagree strongly with Alexander Oil's presentation that the city of Seguin has absolutely refused to provide services to the annex area. That's contrary to the evidence in the record. There was a service plan proposed that included fire, water, police, sewer, whatever. What Alexander Oral is angry about, and that appears in the transcription of the first public hearing, is that they are going to have to pay for the extension from their property to hook up to the main line. And it's within the ordinances of the city of Seguin, and that applies to everyone, that they will lay the main lines, but you are responsible for paying for the hookup. And that was the problem in this case. It was not that the city of Seguin said, no, we're not going to give you any services. But rather, that there was a service plan. Alexander Oil simply did not like it, and is therefore attacking it for that reason.
You were going to distinguish some of the calls like City of Duncanville, which might be one for the Supreme Court, has been relaxing their earlier requirements on the,
I would,
on the absolute necessity of public intervention.
It appears that way because that case was in a, both that case and the Fuller Springs case were in a certain context, and the court made statements within that context, and then the Knapp case and the Universal City case take that statement out of context and apply it to a non-quo warranto situation. In City of Duncanville, if you look back to the Court of Appeals case, you see that they had, the Court of Appeals determined that the annexation was void ab initio. I think it was within someone else's jurisdiction, but it, in any event, it was void ab initio. And therefore, if it's void ab initio, then a private citizen can attack it. And they had come to the Supreme, those private citizens had come to the Supreme Court and said, the Court of Appeals never reached our points of error on the procedural irregularities, and we think they should have, and this court says yes, they should have, but they say it in the context of once you've established void ab initio, then you can collaterally attack. And in that case...
What's the point?
Well, I would say the same. What's the point? But they evidently wanted something in writing saying, yes, the city did not follow the procedures. I suppose it's perhaps a principle to point that out, but you're right. Once it's void, it's void. But that's basically what the court in the city of Duncanville said, was yes, they weren't in full compliance with the statutes, and the annexation could be invalidated because of that.
But why should this court have indicated in the city of Duncanville that citizens do have an individual right to bring an action and are not limited to trying to encourage the attorney general or district attorney to bring a quo warranto action if it was not going to accomplish anything in that case?
Okay, because the basic rule is there can be a collateral attack. A private citizen can collaterally attack, but if he chooses to do so without joining the state in a quo warranto proceeding, then he takes on the burden of having to show that the annexation was void ab initio. And that's what happened in the city of Duncanville. They can collaterally attack. They took on the burden to show void ab initio, and they met it. And the Supreme Court simply says, therefore, you can collaterally attack. You can also attack the procedural irregularities. And the case of Fuller Springs itself was a quo warranto proceeding. It had an interesting twist because the state joined on the side of the city of Lufkin, and there was a dispute between the city of Lufkin and Fuller Springs as to who exercised jurisdiction first. Fuller Springs was trying to incorporate and take in certain territory, and the city of Lufkin passed an annexation ordinance trying to get it before Fuller Springs got incorporated. And the argument was, well, Fuller Springs didn't join the state. Yes, the city of Lufkin didn't give proper notice, but Fuller Springs didn't join the state. And the Supreme Court says, look, you know, they can't join the state. The state's already there. This is already a quo warranto proceeding. So you have those statements about full compliance, and if you're in the middle of a quo warranto proceeding, you can attack a statute, you can, or an annexation ordinance. You can invalidate it for failure to follow procedural requisites. And all of these cases center around certain concepts that I think are long established in the jurisprudence of this state and every other jurisdiction, and that is that concept of entire want of power versus an irregular exercise of power. There's a difference between having the power to annex and the way you go about annexing. If there's an entire want of power, then that lines up with our concept of it's void. Some courts say wholly void, some say void ab initio, and that, in that instance, will permit a collateral attack. If it's a mere, if you have the power in terms of annexation, if it's adjacent to the city, if it's not within some other municipality's jurisdiction, and if it does not exceed the 10% limit on how much land a city can access, those are the only limits on power to annex of a municipality. It's a very, very broad power in the state of Texas, and it's entrusted to the state. The state, in turn, entrusts it to its municipalities, which act as agencies of the state. And once that power is there, when you have rules describing how to exercise that power, those rules, if not followed, are irregular exercises of the power and will only lead to avoidable situation. And it has long been the law in this state and many others that if you're in an avoidable situation, you've got to join the state with you for the policy reasons of, as Justice Hack has pointed out, to avoid a multiplicity of suits, to provide stability of municipal boundaries, to provide stability in the government.
The multiplicity of suits is concerning. At the time that this case came down, we didn't have our modern rules allowing joinder of parties in class action. So don't those changes just take care of all the public policy concerns with reference to multiplicity of suits?
They do not, because as Justice Heck pointed out, these procedural irregularities are many times factual arguments. Here you have a record where Alexander Oil says there was no service plan. We say, yes, there was a service plan. You've got factual disputes to be determined, and there could be multiple factual disputes. Each citizen could bring different facts, and you would have annexation being voided for very practical reasons. In addition, when an area is annexed, there are elections held, voters are franchised in that area. Now, if we void that, does that void the elections the city of Seguin has had since December of 1986, which included those voters? The city of Seguin has already gone forward with plans, has done an environmental impact study, has hired engineers, has started to implement its service plan. It's already taxed. That will call for a refunding of taxes. It's a very serious matter to void an annexation ordinance, and that's the reason for vesting that power in the state to see that the public good, not one individual good, is met. And I don't think that those policy reasons disappear once there are procedural rules for joinder of parties, Your Honor. I might just quickly...
Is it true that this court has never, apart from the city of Duncanville, ruled one way or the other on whether the failure to follow the Annexation Act can be complained of by a single citizen in challenging the city ordinance?
I would say that if you look at the development of the rule, you go move from Kuhn in 1928 down to Hoffman in 72. There's City of Wachita Falls in 44, Byron in 48, Deacon in 66, and Fox Development in 71, and all of them recognize this rule about collateral attacks, that you can only collaterally attack if it's void ab initio, and I think that's
the Annexation Act. Certainly the Open Meetings Act, but even the Annexation Act was not in force during those early years.
That's true.
And there was no counterpart of it during those early years.
That's true. If I might just quickly point out, if the court would look to the Krauskopf affidavit in the record, which is 378, and the public notice, which is at 386, I think you will see the factual differences brought out in this record and the factual disputes on the 12 alleged procedural deficiencies. The city of Seguin argues that there were 24-hour periods between it, that you only were required to give one notice, and that notice was given on the 14th, which was clearly 10 days before. There's no requirement that there be two separate notices. The Krauskopf affidavit says, yes, we did prepare a plan. It was presented at the meeting. It was attached. And the issue about the quorum, there's not a requirement of quorum in a public hearing. That hearing was provided to discuss annexation. It's not an official meeting. And... for those reasons, the city of Seguin would respectfully pray that the quo warranto rule that has long been the precedent in this state remain the rule in this state, that a private citizen cannot collaterally attack an annexation ordinance unless it first shows that it's void ab initio. There's no claim in this case that this one was void ab initio, and therefore the Court of Appeals judgment in this case should be affirmed. I do not know of such a case.
Let me ask you a question before you sit down about with regards to the lack of a quorum in this particular meeting that's being challenged. Mm-hmm. The second meeting, I take it, is the second meeting?
It was the second public hearing.
Second public hearing. Is any action taken, any votes taken?
No, there's no vote. It's not a meeting. It's not a voting meeting.
What is the purpose of that?
The purpose of the hearing was allow citizens to come and discuss the annexation, to ask any question. It's really conducted by the planning department because they're the people responsible for putting together the service plan and discussing it or talking in general terms about the boundaries of the annexation. It's not a meeting. It's not a voting meeting. The councilmen were present, I presume, as a courtesy if any questions were to be directed to them, but there's not a quorum requirement, to my knowledge, in such a meeting.
But it is to receive the input from the citizens who will be affected.
Yes. Yes, and I think at that second meeting that there were no citizens present asking questions. There were in the first hearing, but not in the second.
Was there a quorum?
The second hearing, there were four councilmen present and the mayor, and four councilmen absent.
So there was a quorum present?
I think the city of Seguin's quorum regulation is two-thirds.
Any other questions? Thank you,
Mayor.
Thank you. What attempts did you make to have some governmental authority going forward on the election?
Made no attempt.
Do you know of any requirement, legal requirement, that requires these public hearings to have a quorum of the commissioners?
The reason that this one did is because the city council itself posted notice that it would conduct the public hearing.
I'm asking for any case authority or statutory authority that requires a quorum for public hearings of this nature.
I don't believe there is any, to my knowledge, Your Honor. But once they took the initiative and decided to hold a full city council meeting, then they were required to follow through.
Isn't there a difference between a meeting and a hearing?
I don't believe so under the Open Meetings Act, where a quorum assembles for the purpose of discussing public policy, that then insists on a quorum.
Why was no effort made to have a Quorantro City Institute?
We felt that the statute was void because they had failed to meet so many points, and it seems the law is relatively clear that the city must meet those statutory requirements before it has the power to annex. That appears to be the way the statute's written.
Ms. Calloway characterizes this, your beef, or the beef of Alexander Oro with the city of Seguin, as no more than the requirement of the city of Seguin that you pay for the hookup to their services. Is that correct?
We don't agree with that at all.
What's a beef, other than the ones you've talked about? Any others?
Right. The beef, Your Honor, is that the sewer facility, they've got a commercial development. And they've got several acres right across the highway, Interstate 10, from the city of Seguin. The city won't run sewer out there, and they can't develop. There are other industrial developments within the city limits that they run sewer to and allow those commercial developments to develop. The city won't run it out there.
How far away would they have to, the city that is, run their sewer line so that you could connect up to it?
So that we could connect up to it is one thing. They'd have to run across Interstate 10 or under Interstate 10. But that's only part of the problem. It's a large tract of land. And although there is some commercial development adjacent to Interstate 10, on the backside, there needs to be some extensions. The city won't agree that it has the obligation to make those extensions.
What's your response to her argument that the lawyers for the Alexander Oil were present at the public hearing, that knew that the service plan was discussed, and the beef is you just don't like the plan that they have?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And we totally disagree with that. Every single affidavit that I put before this court says, the attorney says in affidavit, the petitioner says in affidavit, the minutes don't reflect that any service plan was ever presented. No service plan was presented, discussed, or in any way. And the attorney for Alexander Oil that was representing them at that time made a long record on that point. The city planning director said at that meeting they didn't have to furnish services.
So one of your complaints is we're talking about taxation without services.
Yes, sir. It's a little bit more subtle than that, Your Honor, because we have to put in all of our infrastructure, and the people across the road don't. And we get...
Road,
yes, sir, it is. They get to compete, and we have to pay all of our infrastructure, and we have to pay all of our taxes. They pay their taxes, but the city puts in their infrastructure. And that's a big hickey. I'm sorry, Your Honor. That's a big load for individuals that are trying to develop a project. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes the argument of the first call. Hold the second.
Is that answer to the question?